Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. We have another great episode for you. Episode 200. Kind of hard to believe, but 200 episodes going strong. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and it's a good one. But first, a couple sponsors we have on this program. One of them happens to be Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F Nation. That stands up for Wake Up, Live Free Apparel, the world's next hottest and biggest designer brand. No matter what your goals in life are, as long as you're pursuing it, Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F, is the brand for you. Follow them on Instagram, where they're taking pre-orders through DM at Wolf Nation, or email them at wolf@wolfnation.com. Or follow them on Twitter. Check out their gear. They got a new website, wolfnation.rocks. They're going to be introducing spring wolfwear for both men, women, accessories, hats, bags, mugs. They're taking pre-orders. They got a lot of cool stuff going up. So make sure you check out Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F Nation. Wake up, live free. One of our other awesome sponsors is Manskirt Brewing. Manskirt Brewing is located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the old bank building. Just a great place to grab a beer, grab a pint, go play a game, and just take in some of the seasonally inspired ales. Go check out Joe in his Manskirt, and tell him Verbal Shenanigans sent you. Give him love on Facebook and Instagram. They're going to be having their Mayfest on May 19th. They're going to close down the streets, serve lots of German beer, food, games, music in the streets. It's going to be a good time. So go check out Manskirt Brewing. And finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a company that does trivia all over New Jersey in craft beer bars and breweries in New Jersey. And you can win prizes. You can come on out and have a good time. You can win prizes for being in last place. There's a bonus item each week. It's just a good time. So check out Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right. Today on the show, we have UFC, from the original UFC days, legend Gary Goodridge. Gary is really open about his experience as a fighter, his struggles with CTE, concussions, and whatnot. Just a very fascinating interview. Go check out Gary. Go check out his stuff and see some of his work. And see what he's going through. So with that, enjoy the podcast.
His shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Another milestone. Yay.
Welcome back. Can I talk yet?
Yeah, you can talk. You're allowed to talk.
Oh, okay.
You speak when spoken to.
Oh. Yes, master.
Yes. But anyway, everybody, welcome to, Mike, episode 200.
Wow.
100 of these. Well.
Dos Equis 100.
Well over 400 hours of podcasting. Well over that.
Any of it good?
I think there was like an hour in there.
Yeah. You just got to search for it. I think it was that one with the mustache guy.
I mean, if you peel a minute from each episode, you could put together a good hour.
Easily.
Yeah, it's like 1 hour and then all of Lenny Dykstra's interview. It was all stellar, but kind of hard to believe 200 episodes. That's like the equivalent of, you know, over 4 years of work.
Yeah, it's a hell of a time, and all I mean, finding all those guests, all those conversations, all those games.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a hell of a lot of work.
It's fun how the it kind of evolved from, you know, maybe we can get a guest, like any kind of guest, and then it kind of really turned into, especially over, I would say, well, definitely last year, but even before that, probably the last 2.5 years, it's kind of turned into like, let's try to get a guest on every week. And last year we accomplished that. And as of, you know, as we're rolling into May here, halfway, you know, halfway through May almost, we're accomplishing that so far for this year. So,
yeah, yeah. Got the streak going, man. We got our, Joe DiMaggio, our Cal Ripken streak going there. We just got to hit, once we get 2,131 consecutive episodes of guests, we know we made it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're very similar to Joe DiMaggio. By that, I mean we've probably drank the equivalent of what he did during the
pretty time. Much, pretty much. Yeah.
Couple thousand beers, a couple thousand hours, but it's
pretty much at the beer fest.
So yeah, it's kind of neat to think about, you know, how far this little thing has come, and we'll see if we do get to 400. It's kind of weird to think about 400 would be like 4 years from now.
Yeah, it would be something. I would say 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah, so estimate 50 a year. So, yeah.
So three in like a large fraction, something like that.
Yes, yeah,
so
I won't make you do the math, but about 4 years. About 4 years, yeah, that it would take for us to get to 400 episodes.
So let me ask you, I mean, since you're the one who started this show, what was your initial goal? As in, how long did you think you were going to go with this thing, if you will?
I don't think I ever had a goal, to be honest. I think when I started, I was just trying to kind of come up with the idea. Like, what do we do? Like, when I first started, I was definitely trying to be a little bit, well, first I started was trying to be more like topical, like each episode would have a topic or something, like discussion point. And it was definitely, and then like even the first 20 or so episodes were definitely trying to be almost pure comedy based, and like that seemed to be more forced, whereas the strong point is the conversation and the interviews, and that started to develop. I wouldn't even say when you came on, you know, we were still kind of, you know, working some bits out and just trying to come up with funny stories all the time. And it's still, we were still early on not very organized. Well, not, I mean, it would be more like, hey, what are you doing? Want to come over and podcast? It wasn't like this organized, like, let's get one out every week. Let's get one up every week. It was a little bit more rough around the edges. So to say what the goal was, I don't know if I ever really had a goal, but I always wanted to kind of do it for a while. And that love really blossomed from me listening to other people's podcasts. Like, you know, that's what I do. I, you know, if I'm working or working out or whatever it is, I'm 90% of the time listening to podcasts. So it just kind of was like something I wanted to do. And people be like, oh, there's too many podcasts. I'm like, no, there's not. I mean, that's like saying there's too many people playing acoustic guitar out there. Like, are you going to say, like, don't do that? Like, you know,
yeah,
there will always be some new podcast that pops up and catches the imagination of people. And
I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of radio shows, TV shows, whatever. I mean, you can't listen to them all, but you can't complain. Somebody's going out there trying to put out a piece of entertainment and all, trying to enjoy themselves doing it. So. Yeah,
like, what my question is, it's something free that you're able to control and do whatever you want with. So why would someone discourage that? It's like pirate radio or making your own videos. You discourage YouTubers? Like, yeah, no, not really.
Yeah.
You know, and there's
I got a thing against YouTube. I mean, they're just so in your face with, look at me, I'm on a video, look at me.
You know,
I boycotted YouTube and all. I'm purely a blip guy.
Yeah.
That's all I do.
But if you were to tell me, whatever it is, 4 years later, that I'd, you know, still be doing this, and some of the things, not just people, because the people, obviously, I never thought, you know, 1 week we'd have Mark Summers on, you know, like I never thought, you know, we've learned over doing this that people are accessible and kind of how to talk to people to try to get them on. You know, was there, people that were complete luck, absolutely. Like, that I never thought we'd get on. When, you know, some people were easy. It would be like one tweet, and they'd be like, yeah, sure. It's like, whoa, okay. And then other people were like, you know, you got to talk to their agent and, you know, schedule something, and what do you want? And we've had many times where we got to fill out what questions we're going to ask them, which we've never really taken that seriously. but if you were to tell me or talk to some of the people, like you know, my, you know, favorite bass player in a USA song. I'm not going to go into all the people because we always do that. But and then just some of the things and the festivals and stuff like that. I would tell you I wouldn't think that. So 200 episodes in, it's pretty cool to see how it's grown a little bit. So.
Yeah. That's my take.
Yeah. Berlo's trying this new thing, this new type of radio. It's
one called, word answer.
It's called it's not talking. No.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to do 4 hours of just one word answers. That's my goal. Like, I'm screwing up right now by just continuously talking.
We've had a few interviews where I think they've taken that advice. So how'd you get started? Well, you know, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, what do you?
Who are your influences? People in the field. Yeah. Definitely people in the field.
But I must say, like, you know, there is our standout interviews that, you know, you put your top 10%. But I will say that the, you know, that next chunk isn't like, I wouldn't even say there's like 25% bad ones. I would say there's probably like 5%, something like that, of ones that we were like, all right, that was a little long-winded or whatnot, but none of them are ever that bad. Well, maybe we just think they're not that bad. Maybe you guys, the listeners, maybe you guys think they're terrible. But.
We advise everybody to listen to our UPWA podcast. Mm. That's the one we hang our coat on.
It's right short. There. It's sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the action, the play-by-play of the match, I mean, just off the charts.
I was just going to say, if you fast-forward to minute 190, you can hear us you can hear us call a wrestling match very mm-hmm. well, too. So, like, very
yeah,
well.
Yeah. Punch! Punch!
Well, let me...
Yeah, the punch!
Let me ask you, on the flip side, then, do you... Like, you know, I know that when you had come on, you didn't really... even kind of like know the medium that well, and we're just kind of like, yeah, sure. I remember the night I called you. I remember I was at my buddy's bachelor party, kind of loaded, and I was like, I need a co-host. But what did you have any goals or any ideas? I mean, it was, you know, it's pretty obvious after like 5 episodes that you were just going to stay on, and like, there's no way you could have thought you were going to be doing this.
Yeah, I mean, when I first came on, it was just more like getting myself more in the talking mood. I mean, I remember one of our first conversations is, dude, you know you got to talk, right? I'm like, yeah.
Well, that
I
was because we had met each other. So like, for the audience that doesn't know, which is all of you, we had met each other doing another radio show on the at a comedy club, like on a Wednesday night. And it was a big process. And eventually, basically, it turned into me and Berlo setting up this show. And it just got out of control. Over and over again. It was massive setup, 900 people talking, and I had my little podcast going on while that's kind of why I wanted to do it. And I guess you had kind of gotten into this radio show to kind of probably meet people in comedy and just do something, so that's how we ended up meeting each other.
Yeah,
but that and the Tinder date.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was still special to me, that right
still
there.
Still special to me, too, pal.
Yeah, I mean, I really wish you would have ranked me so I can get some more dates down here in Georgia, but still. Well, but, I mean, when we first started, like you said, I mean, there wasn't, like, a set goal or standard or process we had going into it. I still remember the first night just kind of laying on the couch as my microphone is sticking out of a
paper towel holder.
Toilet paper, paper towel holder, and just like shooting the crap around. But I mean, as it went along, it got into more of more interesting as we went along, as we set more goals, as we said, you know, let's try to be more unique as possible. And I've kind of enjoyed trying to find, like, not as we've been lucky enough to get like the high end top people that we've lucked out on. I quite enjoy the unique guests that we have, where somebody's just like, wow, that's a weird thing. The Sharon Alexanders, the Open Biome. I mean, just trying to, the people who made their island in Canada. Yep. I mean, just weird, unique things where it's like, all right, they're not going to be a household name, but when you go to like a party, you could just bring that up in a relative conversation and people get like entranced by, oh my God, that is so weird and unique about these different stories or whatever. And that's what I kind of really enjoyed in as we went along, and I'll just the almost beautiful awkwardness of some of the people that we found.
Yeah. I mean, there's two sides to it. Listen, I love the strangeness. That's kind of how the guest idea started. Like, Paul Templer, who was one of our first ones, that came out of me talking about a bit I was doing about a hippopotamus, me, you, and Doug talking in a car, and then, like, you know, it'd be really fun to, like, talk about, you know, to a hippo survivor, Googling it, getting a phone call that I basically ignored, mm-hmm. and then eventually listened to the voicemail, and that was always kind of, like, to me, like a... not cornerstone. What's the word I'm looking for? Like a turning point kind of moment. Like, oh wait, we can get guests on this show.
We can. And you forgot the part how we badmouthed him as we thought he wasn't going to do our show, and he actually listened to our episode noted that in the message.
Yeah. So like, there's that part of getting the uniqueness that's always going to be there. I do find the challenge now for me is like it's almost like writer's block in a way. Like, oh crap, who am I going to try to reach out to? And I almost have to come up with like ideas, which is kind of fun. At the same time, it's like kind of a challenge. But I also, I'm not going to lie, I love when someone comes or comments like, holy crap, how did you get this person on? Or like last week was one of my favorite recent episodes, I would say, of this year. I really enjoyed Paul Rodriguez, skateboarder, P-Rod, Nike skateboarder. Mm-hmm. And like a comic I know commented like, dude, that was like my idol growing up. He's a little younger than us, so he was a skateboarder. He was like my idol growing up. And I'm like, I know, man. He was an awesome mm-hmm. dude. And what's funny, what's even more interesting is that like this Saturday, there's like some show in Levity Live, and one of the guys contacted me like, hey, he's like, Paul Rodriguez's dad is going to be there. I saw you just interviewed. If you want to come do a late night spot, you know, he should be there if you want to meet him. I'm like, I would love to. I have a concert, but I'm going to see if I can get there in time. So it's just weird things like that. I love the, you know, I'm not going to lie. It is nice. Like, whoa, how'd you get that? And I always tell people, it's like, there's no trick to it. There's no, it takes work. It takes building a resume. That's what I find our quote unquote resume is what has gotten us guests. But if you think that we just know somebody or anything, we don't know anybody. Okay. We just worked at it. I know it kind of sounds like I'm bragging right now, but
it's true though, because so many of our other fellow friends who do podcasts literally have asked you or me the same question over and over: how on earth did you get XYZ? And it's just a matter. I mean, it started from as simple as let's open a Twitter account to basically now we have a full on email trail. We have like a. We have like a full business on how we contact them, what we say in our letters. So, I mean, it's became really professional as,
Yeah, I mean, it is that pleasure of people recognizing like, wow, that's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty cool guest. And I'm like, well, I know. Like sometimes I think the fact that we have to work on getting guests never really lets you, settle. Like you can't be like, wow, we had that guy on, because we try to put this out weekly. I don't think we missed mm-hmm. a week in a long time, and even the weeks we missed, we put out an episode like that we were on another podcast, and the one week I did a thing with my niece, so we've had content out every week, I think, for probably 2 years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it gets long, but sometimes our best episodes when we go into it, like I have no idea what to talk about, and
such as something
random comes through. Yeah, certain examples, not necessarily the most recent one, you know.
But. I mean, guys, we are mega prepared for the 200th extravaganza here. It would not be a, you know, we thought about doing no guest today.
We really did.
We thought
to the limit.
we thought about being like, you know what, let's kick it old school, just me and you.
Mm-hmm.
But we realized that no one really wants that.
Yeah. After 200 episodes, we finally figured out nobody cares about the two of us.
Yes. I'm pretty excited about this interview. I know I said it all the time, but this is another really interesting guest. Coming from you remember the old UFC days, like the original ones. Like I didn't like follow it, but I remember seeing clips and hearing people, and like I remember a friend mm-hmm. had like a tape of like UFC 1 or whatever, like Ken Shamrock and Hoist Gracie. So it was just like no holds bar, basically.
Yeah, no holds bar, no weight limits. I somewhat recall like they had like a sumo wrestler and like the original one.
We were supposed to get that guy on.
Yeah, that's right. Jaren Alexander was supposed to have a double date with him.
I forget
his name off the top of my head, but I remember he, like, you'd see one match and he would destroy somebody, and then he would face up against somebody like 100 pounds less than him, and they'd start punching him in the head and.
Yeah.
He went down.
So our guest comes from that era. In fact, he was in UFC 8 in a tournament, an eight-man tournament, so three matches in a night. The guy fought for years and years and years and years. And he's, unfortunately, he's been dealing with lots of CTE issues and brain injuries, but he is also very outspoken with the injuries, and he's gotten a lot of headlines and whatnot. So we have Gary Goodridge coming on the show.
Awesome, man.
So it should be good to talk to him. Gary seems like a very nice guy. So let's reach out to Gary Goodridge. Gary, I wanted to get you on the show for a while now because I think you have a kind of a fascinating career, not only in just fighting and all different things, but you seem to be kind of building these very interesting things now, whether it has to do with bullying or it has to do with educating people on brain injuries and whatnot. But can we start at the beginning? Where did you get your, first taste of fighting? Were you a martial arts guy? Were you a boxer? Where did you get your first taste of it?
I started off with boxing. Back when I was 13, I went into the gym. And it was too expensive, so I didn't go. And then again, I went again when I was 15, and I was too young. And then again, I went again when I was 18, so I did a little bit of boxing. And then I went back in 19. I did a little boxing, about a week. So I went back and then trained, for about a week, and I became the national boxing champion of Canada.
So in a week?
Yeah, just in a week. Not because I was a great boxer or anything. Trust me, I wasn't. It's just because I could club, but from my hands down to my waist, I was very, very strong. So, and I was determined to win, so that's where I got it. As you can see on my fighting career, K-1 career, that's really all I did. I just clubbed people to death.
No.
So that's what it was.
You must have.
Go ahead, Mike.
You had the strong wrist there. I also see you're like an arm wrestling champion as well. Being that you started as like a welder, did you, when you were initially getting into this, were you sitting back saying, I'm going to make a career in like arm fighting, or was it just kind of a side project?
Actually, what I did was I was working at Honda of Canada Manufacturing. I was 10 years there, and I was just looking for something to say. And around that time, they had a lot of tough man competitions, and you were winning, $1,000 or something stupid like that. And it was going on. I thought, man, I want to get in that tough man competition. I think I can do it. I think I can do it. But meanwhile, I couldn't fight. I never had a fight. Other than doing stupid boxing from here to there. So I was looking for it again, looking at any closer ones, and they were out in the Sioux Mission, St. Marie, and I didn't know about it till it already happened. So in any case, then the UFC popped in. You know, some friends call me, do it, and look at this, and next thing they did all the phone calls, and,
right.
And then when they got me into it, I really had nothing to do with it. They got me into it, and the next thing you know, I was in the UFC 8.
Now you're fighting, you're boxing, you're armor. Now, were you one of the guys that really enjoyed the fighting in the ring, or were you doing it as a challenge or for money? Or like some guys seem to be just pure athletes and love the fight, and they don't, and then other guys seem like they're doing it because they're just good at it. Where did you fall?
Well, the thing about it is that how when fighters, really any of them, they never fight. Right. They're never, big kick-ass kids off the street. It's all, very well-spoken guys, great people, It's not the person that, it's not the that the average people think about. It's not them kind of people. Like, Dave Benatol, he was in UFC 3. Today he's a lawyer, guys like that, you have to think about what you do in order to win.
Well, what's the scene like in those early days? I mean, obviously now it's under Dana White, it's a whole spectacle, but in the real early days, what was the crowds like? What was the reaction going into fights saying, hey, you're going to be a part of the UFC?
Well, you never really knew how, you never know how big the thing's going to be. You never really know if it was going to blow out to what it's at right now. But what we did was we just went in there and throw down, We really didn't have anything to think about. We just went in and throw down.
So you're in this UFC 8 where there's an actual tournament. Did you have did you have any experience fighting like in mixed martial arts before that? And two, did you have experience fighting multiple fights in one night?
No, I didn't have any experience in fighting UFC at all. I didn't have any experience not a UFC, MMA.
Right.
At all. Nothing. Nobody around here where I live knew anything about MMA when I was training. So I had to learn how to box up here, go to Toronto. That's an hour away to do that there. And then go somewhere to learn. It was just retarded. So that's what we had to do to go all, everybody had to go all around to get taught about all these things. So, we had a lot of fun. You had a lot of fun. And like I said, nobody ever knew it would grow to be as big as it is. Had we known, things have been a lot different.
I mean, it had to be a crazy scene these early days. I mean, you're fighting. There's no weight classes. There's a million different styles. There's guys in gis and there's guys with shoes. And was there any care for fighter safety at all back then?
No, there wasn't care for fighter safety at all. As you said, three fights in one night. Bob Myrick done a really good job when he had the UFC, and Art Davies. They tried really hard. They were coming out. They broke the ground in having this thing. So, I think they really tried. Now Bob Myrick and Art Davies, they tried really hard. But it was tough. The three fights in one night killed us. It was rough. I ended up finally winning a three fights in one night down in Brazil. But let me tell you, three fights in one night, you're dead.
I can't even imagine.
Now, one thing I found interesting reading on here, it says for your first fight, apparently your friends convinced you that your opponent was a white supremacist to stoke you up for the fight?
Yes, that's what they said. Just to build the fight. And yeah, I got all pumped up for that fight. Because here's the thing. Paul Herrera was 189 pounds. I was 249 pounds. And you know what? I am not going to let a white supremacist, dude, KKK dude, beat my ass. It's not going to happen. I don't care if I lose any of the match. I'm going to win this one. It was almost impossible for him to win.
You couldn't get pumped up when you fought the black guys, though, you know?
Well, black guys would have got pumped up if I kicked their ass. But because somebody was a KKK member or whatever, that's what they said.
They still said that with the black guys. It was confusing. But, Gary, you went on to fight a lot of fights. I mean, I'm looking at your record. It's 38 and 12 in kickboxing and mixed martial arts, 47 and 23. At any point, do you feel like you're just going through the motions, like just to do it, or did you enjoy it all the way through your career?
No, probably with the last 2 to 3 years, at the end of my career, I was just doing it to go in there and grab some money and leave. I wasn't doing it. It wasn't fun anymore. It was just to pick up a paycheck.
So what about in between the pay-per-views? Did you do any like special training for this? Or did you get any like groups to help you out? Or was it just, hey, they signed me on for the next one, I'll just show up?
At the end or when I was actually doing it?
Well, when you started, like after the first one, was there any knowledge of like training or whatever? It's just like, oh, well, the night's over. I'll see you the next time. I'll kick your ass.
At that point, I was wrestling, at that point we had to learn, we had to try to learn more because wrestling at the time was winning. So, you know, jiu-jitsu was unheard of. Just wrestling was where it was at. So everybody tried wrestling. We knew we had to get no wrestling.
Now,
after wrestling, it was jiu-jitsu.
Now, post-fighting, even now, are you a guy that is able to enjoy fights and do you still find love in the sport, or have you kind of separated yourself from that?
No, I love it. I can't stop watching it. I'm so addicted to this damn thing. But I'm only addicted to UFC, and when I see Bellator or anything, I can't watch it. I've watched it a couple of times, and they do have some great cards now.
Yeah, it's getting better for sure.
Tied up with watching UFC.
Who's your guy? Who's your guys that you love fighting or root for?
I love John Jones, and I believe he'll come back.
Yeah, I think so too.
We're going to make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Certainly not working at McDonald's at the corner store.
No. he's a freak athlete that seems to – he'll find his way somewhere and, you know.
Yeah. He's still young enough to come back and make lots of millions.
So Gary, what made you hang it up? What made you stop? Was it age? Was it injury? What made you stop?
No, it was never injury. I'm not injured at all. It was age, and then I was losing a lot. I was losing a lot simply because I wasn't training. And when you're not training and you're losing a lot and you're old, you kind of leave.
Like, how long were you in it before they started instituting some rules and stuff? Like, as I'm looking through your career, it talks about how in Brazil you grabbed some guy's testicles with your feet or something to that extent. No,
I was pushing his pants down with my feet. Then he got on top of me somehow. So my feet came up through the back of his pants. So I was just trying to shove his pants down. So when we got up, he was in the corner, and really the problem was I wanted to punch his nuts on his I wanted to punch him in the nuts. So I went down in his pants to move it over, and then he screamed about it that I was grabbing his nuts. But it wouldn't matter if I was; it wasn't against the rules. So So he jumped on the floor and went 99% of everybody thinks that I grabbed his nuts. Okay, I went along with it. Yeah, I made peanut butter.
No, I wanted to.
Yeah, peanut butter.
I wanted to ask you about nicknames in fighting. Everybody's got a cool nickname. You got a great one, Big Daddy. Now, I mean, we've been blessed to talk to a couple fighters on the show over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone's kind of got a different story how it happened. And I wanted to ask you, was it like a lot of people are given that name or someone says something in training or whatnot? How did you come, like, where did you get your name from?
Well, I was going to my first UFC. And I was going there and I said, I gotta get a nickname. Everybody's got a name. I need to get a name. You know, so I went to work where I was, at the time I was arm wrestling. I went to a bunch of people. I said, what name can I get? And everybody gave me all sorts of different names. And I finally asked this guy, Cobra Rhodes. He's an arm wrestler. I said, Cobra, what's your name? My nickname? He said, Big Pimp Daddy. And I said, no, I like it. That sounds good. But drop the pimp. I'll take it. Well, that's where I came up with Big Daddy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He wanted Big Pimp Daddy. I said, no, drop the pimp. I'll take it.
Now, you actually brought up one time that in Pride that they were taking bribes. Was that like an overwhelming thing as they were trying to like grow that group, or is that just you had some wrong people into the breed, if you will?
You know, there was a couple guys that that I saw. I saw when somebody asked me to lose a fight or to somebody else and want to give me money for it. I said, no, I want to fight. And after the fight, I really thought I should have took the money because I lost the fight anyways. I was pissed, man. I thought I could have made the money. Damn, I would have lumped up or choked out me out. I would have made the money. So I didn't make any money. So I know some other guys. I'm not going to mention their names because they're probably hit me in the nuts. But you're laughing at.
So, post fighting, is what? How hard is it to give it up and finally, you know, find what you're going to do next? Find where your next source of money. Find where, you know, where are the next how to pay the bills. And obviously, the money probably was not the same as some of these guys are making. How do you do you try to reinvent yourself after fighting?
It's difficult. I'm still learning how to do it. I don't know what to do. What it is, it's such a rough thing to walk away from. Because, like you said, the money, the lights, the women, the this, the that. There's so many things that go along with fighting. And then when it all stops, it's such a huge depression. You'll see a lot of athletes, when they're done, I believe they go into a huge depression. Some people even kill themselves because of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge depression because you're riding on a high for so many years, and all of a sudden your high becomes nothing. It goes away. You know, so it's difficult.
Right. So I wanted
it's difficult.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I wanted to kind of segue into. I told you before that you are very proactive and kind of outspoken about bullying.
Yeah.
You know, it says even on your Twitter right now. I'm looking at it says Gary's Global Heroes battling bullying, which is awesome. And that seems to be a way to reinvent yourself. What is the story behind that? Were you bullied as a kid, or are you just kind of siding with the kids who need help?
I'm really against bullying, and bullying seems to be a huge thing right now. And it's a huge thing to me. I don't like people bullying. I don't like kids bullying. I was bullied as a kid, you know, so I know what it's all about. And people say, oh, you weren't bullied? Well, of course. Anything that makes you different. Anything that makes you different is anyone to bully about. Well, I was a black kid, and I was like Everyone was white, now it's black. So I was like a fly in a bowl of milk, you know. So you know, I didn't like the bully, and I don't like and sure, I was bigger than everybody else, and I was giving so much and this and that, but there was still a lot of bullying. Although I'm bigger than everyone, I'm kicked their ass, but they're still, no matter what, they're still bullying.
Yeah, that's a shame. What are your thoughts now as you see, like, a bunch of ex-NFL players? There's all these lawsuits going on concussions and so forth. I mean, obviously, in the early days of when you fought, I mean, it was just wild and crazy, and there was less safety involved. But what are your thoughts on people complaining now and giving lawsuits? Do you feel they have a logical case, or do you feel it's something like they knew what they signed up for?
I believe we have a logical case. Nobody signs up to have brain injury. Nobody says, you know, hey, let me join that sport for the brain injury. Absolutely not. Nobody signs up for a brain injury. You know, I did my sport. Everyone's he did it. He did this. But again, nobody signs up for brain injury. If somebody told me at the beginning of my life or at the beginning of the sport, hey, listen, Gary, you're going to have brain injury. You're going to have issues. You're going to go to jail. You're going to do this. You're going to do that just because you have brain injury. Would I sign up and want to do it? Absolutely not. You know, I believe it's just a matter of time before UFC gets sued or to help people, because it's only a matter of time before people like myself start getting hurt. You know, I'm hurt. Whether it's in front of UFC, is it not? Who knows? But I am injured. I will never be the same.
Right.
I'm not the person that you're listening to. You know, I've changed quite a bit. I don't know that I've changed. Of course, everybody told me I've changed. It's just I don't even know if you hear it in my voice. You know, the stumbling and all this other stuff. This is not me. But it's only a matter of time before this thing comes down in MMA. It will. Because everybody knows everything about brain injury and how much it is now. It's a huge story from any group. Football, you have something in baseball, all this other stuff, boxing. You know, it's been going on for years.
Yep.
Yes, and Dr. Umalu, and I believe that's enough, Dr. Umalu brought it down to what it is and how it is, and let's get on with it. You know, I'm happy to see that they're moving forward with this, and you know, they're not moving forward fast enough.
Right.
Because the more I've known people that have died that took their lives from this. I know three people that actually took their lives from because of this.
It's tough.
Wow,
it's a tough subject. Yeah. You know,
and these are the people that I just know. How many of the people that disappeared that nobody knows?
Right.
You know, I know three people personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough subject. I mean, what is awesome that you are openly talking about it. You are you're out there, you know, advocating for people who are going through similar things that you have been through, or like you said, you've seen friends go through. And like even like looking at your Twitter and whatnot, you seem to post a lot of positive things, a lot of positive messages. You know, like even today I was looking, you had a picture that was pinned, strangers can become friends no matter what age, just this nice picture of you with like a older white lady. So you seem to really have a good perspective on life and a good kind of outlook. I wanted to ask you before we go, like, what do you do?
Was that picture of me, strangers, me and this white lady in the mall?
I think it does look like the mall.
It was with me, right? The picture was with me?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like the first picture on your Twitter today. But I wanted to ask you, how do you keep a positive mindset, and what kinds of things do you do, like, outside of, you know, obviously watching fighting and doing interviews and whatnot, but what do you do to kind of entertain yourself these days?
I would really like to do something. I don't know what I do. But then my house getting fat. all I'm doing is getting fat. So now I have nothing to do. I just started, nothing to do. Can't even work out.
Yes.
You know, my shoulders are gone. Both my shoulders have to be replaced. My my knee's gone. You know, it's just there's always something, you know.
Right.
Always.
Yep.
Always something.
Mike, go ahead.
I'm just out of curiosity. I mean, with everything that's changed nowadays, if you had to, if you did it again, and nowadays with the way the fighting is, would you get still go into mixed martial arts? Or you think you would have stayed in welding?
Hey, you're not listening to me. I said, of course I would. I wouldn't do this. I'd probably pick up a badminton racket and play badminton or something.
Well,
no, I wouldn't. Like I said, nobody jumps in this stuff or jumps in football. Hey, I'm going to go out and get a brain injury. You know, right. Nobody says that. Nobody thinks that. At first, they think, but man, I got a scholarship. I got this. I got that. I got hired. I'm going to Japan to fight people.
Right.
You know, people are all excited at first because, and that was before. Now people understand differently what happens.
Mm-hmm.
When you get their brain injury, people understand what the hell that is. And now people are taking a better look at it. You know, what's wrong? But personally, I think after your third or fourth concussion, you need to go find something else.
Yeah.
I think I've had 27.
Wow. God.
You know, obviously when you get knocked out, that's a concussion. I've been knocked out several times. But here's the thing. When you're fighting a lion, you have to fight a lion many times before that lion. You know, because you can't fight the Oscar the Grouch and train with Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't.
Yeah.
You gotta fight that Grouch every day for 3 months in order when you face the real one, it's a little bit easier. Or it's a little bit more even. Because he's training for the same thing.
Right.
That makes sense, right?
Yeah, so, for sure.
Or you got it's all about working hard. You gotta work hard. These guys trying to kill you. These are guys trying to maim you, take your money. You know, you have to train hard.
Yeah.
And training like that, most of the injuries, 90% of the injuries happen in training. When you finally go to the ring to fight, all your injuries already happened. Every time, because like I said, you can't go out and fight King Kong when you're training with Snow White. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You have to train as much as that he can. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So when I understand that more, you know, you have to fight according to where you're going to fight. Sorry, I'm talking too long. Go ahead.
No, I mean it's very interesting, man. I can't, you know, it's amazing to talk to someone who has, you know, so much experience and a lot of, you know, different viewpoints that we don't get to hear all the time. So I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes on the show. We really appreciate it. And if people want to go say hi to you, where can they go? What, your Twitter?
Go on Twitter. Get on my Twitter. I'm seeing if you can get a hold of my Twitter. Facebook, I don't really get
it. That's awesome. Gary, thank you so much, man. And I'll send this to you when this is up on Friday.
Privilege, Gary.
I wish you and your soul very well. Really nice talking to you. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you so much, Gary. Really appreciate it.
Hey.
All right, the one and only Gary Goodridge.
Very honest, very open interview.
Yeah, I mean, It covers a lot of, you know, there's a lot there. There's a lot there in that interview. Both positive things, funny things, and then, of course, some sad things, too. So, but it's, you know, life is interesting. So the life of a fighter, you know, man, it's just crazy. It's a crazy life. Like, you know, we all love it. We all love these big fights and watching them. Like, the more I listen to different UFC things, I've been getting more and more into it the last 2 years. But, like, sometimes you got to pump the brakes and take a look back. Like, these guys are getting their head smashed in, you know? Like, it's a fine line between entertainment and, like, oh, man. You know, like, is this worth it?
Well, think about it. Like, I remember when I was younger and boxing was a big thing. And, like, the older statesmen who loved boxing, they would tell stories about, oh, these two guys fought for, like, 78 rounds or something insane, where it's literally they fight until somebody just drops and can't get up. And it makes you really wonder, like, as we talk about, for lack of a better term, the pussification of some sports, you got to kind of see what came from the past and say, kind of a reason why we're leaning that way, you know? I mean, we all love watching the TV and plopping our money and eating our chips and dip, but nobody wants to sit back and see somebody, you know, at 60 years old, barely remembering how they get up in the morning or what to do or who's their family and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was fascinating. I thought he's great. Like, I thought, you know, he had a good outlook on things, and I liked how open he was. So, Gary Goodrich.
Yeah, well, I do have a game.
Oh, a game.
Yeah.
Yes, that game that we worked on for, we started that like last February, I think.
I think so. I mean, we've had a few games before. I mean, you're Derek Jeter's son.
Yes.
You brought back John Glenn and Tom Petty.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we also have our little quiz games to see how much you recall about our little podcast thing that we do.
Oh, yeah. We've had plenty of games. We had, I've tested you on what your spirit animal is. I've made you try to figure out what stories are true, my little holiday stories, crime. Mm. We've done a lot of games here.
So
you got something, you got a game for us.
Yes. So in honor of the 200th episode, I have a game here about our certain episodes, some of our guests, just to kind of see how much you do really know about everything, Scotty.
All right. So this is going to be bad, guys. This, how much I know about my own podcast here.
Yep.
I think we did this like almost like, had to be 100 episodes ago, like a long time. It might have been around like 100 to see what I know. So this is good.
All right,
here we go.
Let's start off with this one. True or false, we have gone 100 consecutive episodes with a guest.
100, huh? So that would make from episode 100. I'm going to say no. False.
False is correct. Episode 110, Gun Control, Bipedal Bears, and the Juice. Had no guess. I get somewhat gray area. The Kira cast was 137.
Still guessed.
Yeah. So we get a guess this week and we go another 10, then it's true.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So only awesome. One out of the last 100 had no guess?
Pretty much, yeah. I looked down the list. Like, I even, as I wrote the question, I'm like, huh, I'm kind of curious about this answer.
That's pretty good. All right, one for one.
Yeah. All right. So, on the 50th, we had our grand celebration, and we got Dollar Tree involved and all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On 100, do you recall our 100th guest?
Adrian Hayes.
That's correct, but that's not the question. And obviously, this is our 200th. But who was on our 150th episode?
What?
I'm going to give you four choices.
I
was going to
say, do I get options or do I got to guess this?
Yes, you do.
All right, I'm not going to look.
The DeVoe brothers, Dan Gutman, No Shame, Tony Borglum.
One more time. Run them back.
DeVoe brothers.
The DeVoe brothers from Tag?
World Chief Tag.
Okay.
Dan Gutman, No Shame, Tony Borglum.
I want to say the DeVoe brothers from World Chase Tag.
I'm sorry, it was Drive a Tank with Tony Borglum.
All right, brother, let's continue this game here.
All right, so when we left off, you got one right, you got one wrong. Next question, how many episodes were two-parters?
Ooh.
How many episodes were two-parters?
Is this an
two,
option? Or
three, four, or five?
All right, so I gotta talk through my thinking here. All right, so the President's Day, I don't know if that... All right. Now let me ask you, does the Halloween episode count as two? Like that would count as two.
I'm counting any episode that's marked as part one and part two.
Okay.
And back to back weeks.
All right. So I know Halloween episode, we did Irony Singleton and Brian Ouellette, and that was last year, and that was awesome. Irony Singleton, by the way, guys, from The Walking Dead. And Brian Ouellette was an exorcist, so go back and check those out. So I know that was a part one and part two. I'm trying to think if President's Day was a part one or two. I think we just kept them all together in one, so I'm going to say no on that one. I know we did two Halloween. We did two Christmas episodes this year. Okay, so that's definitely two. I'm going to go with three.
Four. You are correct.
Hello.
There we go. It's going through the headset now.
Okay.
Did you want to do the camera thing or?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. So.
All right. So before you dropped out on your remix, you said it was four.
Yes, so you were correct in the Christmas Spectacular and the Halloween cast as two-parters. The other ones was the Big Brew Fest.
Oh, I think I know the other one, too. Yes, I remember Big Brew Fest was two. And the other one was with Brian Einarsson.
You are correct.
Wow, yeah. Brian Einarsson is a gay comedian, and we had him on for like a two-part thing on his life. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, damn. All right. I bet you with enough time, I probably could have come up with that.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, this is specifically for a guest of ours, one of your favorite wrestlers of all time, Al Snow.
Yes.
How many times has Al Snow won a title in the World Wrestling Federation or Entertainment?
Any title.
Is it six? Yeah, any title. Is it six, eight, 10, or 11?
Hold on. Let me call the Shining Wizard podcast real quick. I'm just going to go with six.
Eight. He was a European champion. He was a tag team champion. And six times he was a hardcore champion.
Does that count any ECW belts or...
Not ECW. Just wanted to question was specifically WWF. I don't think he won any titles in ECW.
I don't remember. I know that's when I like fell in love. That's why I really enjoyed him. Like with all the heads being thrown into the ring and whatnot. But again, yeah go back and check out the episode with Al Snow.
Mm-hmm.
It's another fascinating
guy. Now, Victor Wooten is our only guest to win a Grammy. He's won five of them. Can you guess who is our only other guest who was at least nominated for a Grammy?
Woo-hoo.
Was it Chris Ballou? Was it Snow? Was it Andrew WK? Or was it Gift of Gab?
Wow. First off, that's pretty cool to think about. I mean, I remember hearing that, but it's fun to think that we've had a Grammy winner on, too. I'm going to say... So it was Chris Ballou. Who was the second option?
Chris Ballou, Snow, Andrew WK, or Gift of Gab?
I'm going to go with Andrew. I'm going to go. I'm torn between Chris Ballou and Andrew WK. I'm going to go with Chris Ballew.
You are correct.
All right.
He was nominated twice for President of the United States.
I was thinking about how successful that first album was. And Andrew WK was pretty huge, too. But I don't know if, you know, the presence was like on every radio station kind of successful. So, survived that one.
Yeah. Now, Igor Vovkovinsky was our tallest guest at 7'8". Now, I can't necessarily get the height of every single one of our guests, but of these four, who would be possibly our second tallest guest? Is it Kenny Anderson? Okay. Is it Christian Okoye? Is it Trent Dilfer? Oof. Or is it Lester Speed?
Wow. All big athletes here. Oh. Lester Speed was Terry Tate. He looked pretty damn tall. Dilfer was a pretty big quarterback. Koi was big too, but I'm going to go with Lester Speight. Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
He is 6'6".
Wow.
Dilfer was 6'4". Okoye was 6'1". Oddly, the NBA player, Kenny Anderson, was 6 foot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, guys,
I was checking out all of our athletes and trying to think of a height question. I was surprised to see Pipa Man and Takuma Sato are the same height at 5'5".
Yeah. again, guys, as you hear these names, go check out all these episodes. If you go to Podbean or iTunes, you can pull any of these up. So, yep. All right.
Back to podcasting questions. How many states have the podcast been recorded in between the two of us? Is it 3, 4, 5, or 6?
How many states have we recorded in?
Yeah, as in one of us was in a certain state at that time.
Oh, wow. All right, so Georgia won. We went to record in Pennsylvania in the Poconos.
That is true.
We've had to have done something in New York City. In New York. God. Where else could... I know you've been on vacation before in, like, North Carolina or somewhere like that, so that's definitely, like, 4. I'm going to go with 4.
It's 5.
Oh!
Obviously, Georgia.
Yep.
Pennsylvania, we've done a few podcasts for Pocono Raceway.
Yep.
Obviously, New Jersey.
Yeah.
I was in North Carolina for, who was it for? Abby the Astronaut.
Ah, yes.
And you forgot the two New York ones would be Mark Riccadonna's podcast or when you went to interview Anaronic Brewery.
Ah, yes, yes. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Good question.
Good question. All right. So, let me see what we got here. Okay. Short Shenanigans went up between what two episodes? 48 and 49, 52 and 53, 57 and 58, or 62 and 63?
I'm going to go A, 48 and 49.
You are correct.
Yes, I remember that. Short Shenanigans was supposed to be like, if I had time during the week or Mike had time, we would do like little 10-minute rants and like just put them up. And that was the time when you were recording yours. I remember you talking about laundry and then 9/11 and... We never went any further than that. That was the end. But we also picked up like what we do a little bit more than just talking about, you know, our uncles and whatnot.
Yep, exactly.
So Short Shenanigans probably won't make too much of an appearance ever again.
Now tonight we interviewed Gary Goodrich, who was in the UFC. We have interviewed quite a few from the UFC.
Yep.
According to SureDog.com, of these four guests, who has the best winning percentage? That's the key, winning percentage, not amount of wins. Jim Miller, Dan Miller, Alex Morano, James Krause.
Oof. Best winning percentage. Now, Jim Miller here, I know, would have the most fights of any of those guys. But I know he's had a good amount of losses. Dan Miller, I thought, was like 15 and something. I'm going to go with Alex Morono.
James Krause. James Krause is 25-7. That's a 78.1% winning percentage. Wow. Alex Morono was second, 14-4 at 77.8. Jim Miller was third at 70%. He's 28-12. And his brother Dan Miller is third at 14-8, a 63% winning percentage.
All right. Well, we should be having Jim Miller back on the show, so that should be cool.
All right. We're going to be like, well, what's taking you so long? Come on. Get those numbers up. I'm not in the same state, so I can ask that question.
Just ask him winning percentage numbers. Just keep comparing them to all different people.
I'm just saying, Kimbo Slice was 5-2. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I know you want to talk about beer and hunting, but can you please see if you have a better winning percentage than Holly Holm? Go. All right.
To one of our more popular episodes, Scott, what was the first thing you confessed on the SS humiliation? Was it A, that you shit the bed with your wife next to you? Was it B, that you were impotent with a girlfriend? Was it C, you had wee boxers at school, and when you leaned over, all the kids laughed at you? Or was it D, that your family members were throwing watermelons in the swimming pool in front of your girlfriend?
I don't like you right now, because what you just did was like reveal all of them at once to like a brand new audience. We already got this onto an episode, and if people wanted to hear it, they could have went back and listened to it. But you just blasted out four horrific things about me with no game, no nothing. You just said, okay, here you go. Here's all four terrible things you did. Now, Scott, answer the trivia question. Dick.
Technically, I left out the fifth one. I listened back to that one. I forget what the fifth one was, if you want to share it.
Well, that was for some reason, I think that still might be our most listened to episode, of course.
Second most.
Back, we played a game that I came up with called Humiliation Battleship. And so the concept of the game was that your most embarrassing story would be like the aircraft carrier. You had to have like five stories. You play battleship, and you sink your ship. You had to reveal a story, which was a pretty great bit. But what happened was that Mike, quote unquote, didn't cheat, but His software seemed to be working wonderfully, and mine seemed to not work at all. And all my ships were getting sunk, and Mike's were not getting sunk.
You got two of them.
Yeah. And we had to reveal things. We have to bring that back in some way. I could probably think of more embarrassing things. We can do that, but we could also do it like a different type of game with it. But I'm going to say that my first embarrassing thing I revealed was impotency with an ex-girlfriend.
You are correct, yes, Brennan.
Yes, thanks, buddy. I'm glad I was able to bring that back up. Thank you.
My pleasure. And our final question for the game, it's not going to be multiple choice. There, since I've come on the show, since episode 25, can you name all guests
what we call the downfall?
Name all the guests who have been on the show at least three times. Wow. And I'll help you out by saying there are 5 of them.
Okay. At least three, right?
Three episodes they were on to be interviewed in some way.
AJ Mattioli, obviously, first and foremost. I think he has the record.
9.
Dom Bagnato.
Correct.
Okay. Now, this is where I got to start to think. Okay. Marcelo Balboa was only twice. Tom Verney.
That is correct.
Tom Verney, retired NYPD officer. All right, this is where I'm really going to have to think. Three times. We had 200 people three times. Does Doug, Doug Matz?
Incorrect.
Okay.
Incorrect. He's only been on twice.
Okay. You give me a hint.
I'll give you a hint. With both of them, we met them at remote locations for at least one of their episodes.
We met them at remote locations at one, for one of their episodes. Remote locations. Where have we gone remote? We've gone remote at Dom's house. We've gone remote at Manskirt. Demented. Kilt Fest. We know when no one would be on there. McDonald and Carney at the Oak Barrel. I don't know. I'm going to need another hint here. I got nothing. I'm drawing nothing.
The remaining two guests actually both appeared on one episode together.
Ah.
Not in the same room, but they were both on the on a single episode.
I can't get it. Oh God, it's gonna hurt. It's gonna sting when this reveals and I didn't get it right. You got one. You have one more hint for me because I'm gonna. I got. I'm drawing blank.
Food.
Has Brian Duffy been on three times? No.
Nope.
Food. Oh, okay. Randy Santel.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, God. Randy Santel and who else? I don't know. They were on the same episode. When the hell do we have radio? Chips Cooney?
Nope, he only did twice.
All right, I give up.
Big Irish Peter Nixon. He called in on Randy's first episode. He came to your house on the second episode.
Oof.
And we went to UPWA for the third episode.
That's a tough one. The call-in. I forgot about that. That was good, too, because that was like a live call-in.
Yeah.
Wow. Mike, well done. Well done. I liked those questions.
Thank you, sir.
Hit them from some different angles, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I like the height of our guests. That was pretty good. Now, Mike, my question to you is, can you put all our guests in height order? Go.
Okay. Igor Volkovinsky. Lester Speed. Biff Hutchinson, very rarely known that he's 6'4". I mean, I guess the last answer would be Pamela Ray or your or Kira.
Kira, yeah, Kira would probably be the smallest, yeah. but yeah, I guess it wouldn't be a 200th episode with probably our most recurring bit, bro. It's time to go to Bear News.
Oh! We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking bear news! Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl! You know I like them bears and shit.
All right, for those of you just tuning in, we do this ridiculously stupid bit from time to time. I'm not even sure exactly how it started. I know we used to talk about news stories a lot. We used to do a bit called Dirtbag of the Week a lot, which we haven't done in a while. That's not to say that won't return. Haven't had the influence here. But somehow it turned to bear news seems to be the bit that we, for some reason, enjoy. I know that part of it is because I really enjoy bears, but it's just kind of taken on a life of its own. By life of its own, I mean that me and Mike talk about it, and that's kind of it.
That's pretty much
it. Yeah. So I'm going to give Mike three bear stories. stories here, and we're just going to report some interesting news that happened with anything involving bears. All right, Mike. Where is the one that I just exited out of? Hold on. I can edit this. All right, Mike. Bear mauls and kills man in India after man tries to take selfie with injured animal.
Well, I can't see how that went wrong.
No selfie is worth your life, and yet people still continue to snap up-close photos with wild animals. Just like you, buddy. But yours was dead.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. The Shenanigans Showdown. I think that was a 10-pointer. I forget. 5 or 10 points.
You had to take a selfie with a roadkill deer. And then you got called an asshole.
Humiliation on that, but I will say I took the selfie and I thought I wasn't close enough where there might be a dispute. So I turned around to go back. As I went back, I went a little bit off the road and my car got stuck. And I had to wait an hour for AAA because I had to go back and do a better selfie with a dead deer.
What's even funnier is that the discrepancy, like, imagine, what did you think? I was going to be like, nah, that deer's napping, bro. Like that.
Well, like, the first one I kind of saw, like I'm on the other side of the picture, the deer's on the other side of the picture where I might see you kind of be going, no, man, you got to be, like, right up next against it. I don't accept this as a winning point.
It'd be great if, like, you're taking the selfie and the deer just wakes up and runs away.
Burlew's out this week. He's got a lot of antler punctures in his body. But he's still up 10-0 on the Shenanigans Showdown, so we'll have to catch up.
All right, so the most recent incident here, okay, is out of southern Odisha, India, where a man tried to take a selfie with a wounded bear, and the predator mauled and killed the man in response. Gruesome footage of the attack shows Prabhu Batara approaching the bear, who is lying on the grass, to take a picture. According to the Independent UK, the bear started to maul Batara shortly after he approached. A ranger for the forest area where the attack occurred, Dunjaya Mopatar, said in a statement that Batara died instantly and the bear involved is currently being treated for injuries. Batara came across the bear while driving back from a wedding in an SUV. The vehicle stopped so the occupants could relieve themselves. And that is when the man spotted a bear to get a selfie with a wild animal. His travel companions warned against a photo, but were not able to stop Batara from attempting the stunt.
See, little kids, this is why your parents yell at you when they say, did you go before we leave?
Yep.
And you say, I don't have to go. And then this kind of crap happens.
And then your dad says, well, you want to die from a bear.
You come back from a wedding. You're all nicely dressed up. We got to wait for you to take a pee. You're a little shy. You have to go into the corner. We're bored. We got nothing else to do. We see a wounded bear. We try to take a picture with it. Are you happy?
So according to the New York Post, this is the third selfie-related wild animal attack in Odisha in the past year. Two others were reported crushed to death by elephants.
I really hope he actually knew about those two stories. And he said, no, those were elephants, man. That ain't going to happen to me. I'm smart. This bear's injured. What can he do?
So
I was a little more surprised there's a bear in India. I didn't think that would be part of their habitat.
Not only that, like, why? So you got to go take a picture with the injured bear? What kind of man are you? Like, that doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
So, what, it's got a gimpy leg or something? You're cool because you took a picture with it? It's annoying.
If anything, just get the selfie stick out so you can get in the background, man. Don't be going walking up next to it, hey, what's up, bro, and just try to, like, go palsies as you put your arm around the wounded bear.
Yeah. Well, all right, story two, Burlew. This one's possibly my favorite, and it just explains, you know, where it took place. So a bear helped start a match in Russia, and we can only hope to see this at the 2018 World Cup. So Russia, a apparently is on an entire different level when it comes to soccer. In a third division match between Mashuk KMV versus FC Ongust. Remember, you had a lot of money in that game.
Yeah.
A bear was used to hand the ball to the referee. This isn't a joke. A real bear, scary yet cute creature, handed the ref the ball and also started clapping. And there is a video attached to it that maybe we can share the link. But yes, the referee comes and takes the ball, like the ceremonial ball, from a what looks like a 6 foot, 6 foot five grizzly bear.
If you ever watch soccer videos in like Europe and Asia and all that stuff, I mean, most of them involve like the fans running after these refs and all trying to kill them because they make a bad call or something like that. So their lives aren't shitty enough. Now you got to sit back and say, I have to grab a ball from a vicious wild animal and pray it listens to his trainer saying, now clap now, Woofy.
Now, maybe that's the way to – maybe there's something here. Maybe that is the way to get rid of people running on the fields by having just like bears like kind of on the sidelines.
That's an interesting take. So like a player starts running after the ref, and then they're like a visiting player, so then the fans jump out, and then the fans jump out, and we need security, so we release the bear.
100%. And then it becomes like almost like a gladiator fight at the same time, so people are getting like, you know, almost like a double ticket there.
Yeah. See, this is how you get the ratings for the World Cup with America not in there in the U.S. I will stay up till 2 in the morning to see a ref running away from a bear for his life.
Or, but I'm also, I'm not even just a ref. I'm thinking of fans running on the field, and then they release the bear, and it just intercepts that person, and it's over.
See, that's a really trained bear. I mean, it's kind of, we go back to The Walking Dead, which... the tiger, where you're like, how does it know which one's the bad guy? I mean, I don't think they can really work that out. I'm pretty sure, like, Ronaldo will get mauled by a bear in Russia.
I mean, but if they, I mean, if they could train animals to speak and to do all sorts of different things, they can train a bear to attack someone who's running on the field. Maybe they just got to train to attack shirtless people, because 90% of the time they don't have clothes on.
Well, hopefully they don't do that whole, who was that female player that ripped off her shirt after winning?
Nomar's wife. I'm blanking on the name, but yeah. All right, last one, bro, last one. So you say that you couldn't train a bear, right, to attack visitors on the field. But did you know?
I couldn't. I got to be honest with myself.
Well, you know, honesty is the best way to start. But absolutely. Did you know you can train a dog to sniff out porn?
Really? Like specifically porn? Does it get a lighter scent if it's softcore porn?
No. But a porn-sniffing dog helped bring down Subway star Jared Fogel.
That is the weakest. I mean, if his life ain't bad enough in jail, he probably gets the shit kicked out of him every day. I hear he gained like 80. I heard he gained like 80 pounds just because he just spends all his time like buying like cookies and stuff from the shops they got there. Just add to it. Like every day they're like, so, Jared, I hear Scruffy got you arrested, huh?
Yeah. Okay, so he's a bloodhound for the digital eggs, a rambunctious black Labrador named Bear.
Oh, now I get it.
One of only 5 dogs in the nation trained to sniff out electronic data devices played a key role in the arrest of former Subway pitchman Jared Fogel on child porn charges. The two-year-old rescue pooch nosed out a thumb drive that humans had failed to find during a search of Fogle's Indiana house in July, several weeks before he agreed to plead guilty to having X-rated images of minors and paying to have sex with teenage girls. Bear has taken part in four other investigations, including the arrest of Olympic gymnastics coach Marvin Sharp. And he's just been sold to Seattle Police Department to help investigate internet crimes. There's a series. There is a Netflix series written all over this. Bear.
I just like how this dog is just getting all these celebrity athletes and all. I mean, what did he catch Sandusky? That'd been awesome.
Yeah.
That'd been the greatest ending, like Pacino playing Paterno and just looking outside of that dog and shaking his head and just putting his head down.
Yeah. So, much the way other dogs can pick up the scent of a fugitive or a cache of cocaine, Bear can smell the components of electronic media, even a microcard as small as a fingernail that a suspect could easily hide. Labs are the best for this, said Jordan, fending off playful licks from Bear. They'll do anything to please their owner. Kind of weird. Kind of a weird statement there. Yep.
Yeah.
So Bear just got a new owner.
That's a different type of porn. We're going to need a different dog to sniff that out.
We're going to need a dog to sniff out the dog for animal porn.
And then if the dog runs out onto a field, we send a bear out there to get it.
And it comes full circle. So the Seattle Police Department paid $9,500 for Bear, and now he is on the canine unit. So,
Lord, and you know somebody has, like, just put, like, their media away of, like, their vacation photos, and that dog just started barking, and he got his ass thrown in jail for a weekend.
Have you noticed Callie barking crazily at your computer at all recently?
That's why I keep my computer in the shed, man. I can't handle it. Why is the dog going so nuts? Just don't worry about it, honey, and don't ask what my password is. That's all that matters.
Babe, Callie's been acting real weird. Why are you burying the computer in the backyard?
That's how you upgrade it, babe. I'm in IT. Don't question me.
Well, anyway, that is another edition of Bear News.
Bear News. We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking bear news. Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl. You know I like them bears.
Yes. So, Burley, you got anything before we go?
I guess I can bring up, my parents are getting me into yard sailing, which is odd. Something I didn't think I'd get into.
Well, I like that you've made it a verb, yard sailing.
Yeah.
Not you're into going to yard sales, you're into yard sailing. You just acted like, you know, like guys who are into actual like sailing and whatnot, but you're into yard sailing. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're into other people's junk is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. The parents kind of convinced me. So like this past weekend there's a group of estates that's about 10 miles down the road, and like they got like thousands of houses in there, and like every summer they have like one weekend where everybody in there pretty much has a yard sale, and it's like one of the biggest events in Georgia. So I picked up like my Georgia, sweet Georgia. So when I used to do it, my parents did it, and I was like a teenager. I couldn't stand it because number one, you got to get up at like 5:30 in the morning
to get first ready on the good deals.
Yeah, exactly. They pretty much go, well, yard sales don't open until 7. But what you do is you get there by like 6 and some people are setting up, and then you can beat other people into the deals.
The old Black Friday mentality.
Yeah, it's the strategy. It's like you don't get it when it opens. You get there when they're setting it up for it to be open and then grab all the deals.
Gotcha. So next year you'll be camping out is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be like a rock concert. I'm going to have my tent that I bought for $5 out there, you know, cooking on my grill that I got for $3. Just saying enough. I'm going to get that VHS DVD player.
Yeah.
Just wait.
I'll say I don't mind a yard sale here now. They just had an event in our neighborhood. We checked out a couple things looking for we were in search of a small dresser. We didn't find one, mm-hmm. but there were some cool things there, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, the thing that my parents and my brother do is they buy up all the bicycles and the dog cages at all these places, and my brother resells it at an auction about 2 hours down south.
Really?
Like quadruple the price. So very weird combination of things that equates to big money.
Oh, I thought it was some kind of elaborate, like, you know, ride the bike into the dog cage kind of trap.
First, we put the bike into the cage, and then a little six-year-old goes in there. Then we ship him off to Russia, and that's where the money begins.
And then they're following bears with soccer balls for the rest of their life.
We call that the Georgia Kremlin.
So what did you get at the yard sale? What were you looking for?
I got a king-size bed for... I can't wait to do it, because... since we've been down here, the room that we're in, that only has like a full. Mm-hmm. So you can just imagine two grown adults and a hound dog in the bed trying to share it. We get a little cranky in the morning between the three of us.
So how much did you get the king size bed for?
It was listed at $120. We got it for $80.
Not bad. Not bad. So it's the bed frame, right? Not the mattress.
No, the entire deal, the bed post, the bed frame, the mattress box, and a mattress. Now, my brother's going to give me a better mattress, but I got the full thing for $80.
No, was the mattress used?
Well, obviously the mattress was used. Yeah. It wasn't brand new.
I can't do it. You got to burn the mattress and get it. You got to splurge on the mattress.
Yeah, I mean... mattress burning, that's the number one popular thing down here in Georgia. When we run out of crosses, that's what we do.
Yeah, well, you know what? Like, you can't sleep in someone else's mattress. You just don't know what's in there.
Yeah.
You and the girl got to get a nice, brandy new one that you like, that's to your size. You don't want anybody's bed bugs or Ku Klux Klan residue on your mattress.
Yeah, they always leave residue. That's the biggest problem we have with the KKK. It's just that. you know, everything else they stand for, it's like, all right, I get it. But, you know, it's like, God damn it, clean up your residue.
All right, well, so now are you, like, looking for new yard sales? Like, you're looking for upcoming ones to really keep the streak going?
Well, we'll be checking them out. But pretty much my parents say, like, that was, like, the big event. Like, there'll be yard sales down here and there down the road, but like that's like the big event. So the next one will be in the fall for that estate. So, you know, we just got to prep up for it.
All right. Well, happy shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. You know, that's not bad though for a bed frame. That's not bad. I could do a frame. Can't do the mattress.
Yeah, I mean, my brother's going to hook me up. He gets a deal from a guy, those memory foam ones, with used to go for like $1,200. He's going to get it for like $150. So
nice. Yeah. Well, I guess to end this podcast, you do a nice story from Georgia. We got to do a story from New Jersey that might be possibly the greatest news story to happen in my life. I'm sure you've heard this story that the superintendent, so the Kenilworth Board of Education is holding a special meeting on Saturday to discuss Superintendent Thomas Tramaglini, who has been charged with defecating in public. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, track coaches and staff at Holmdel High School Okay, so not far from where you grew up, Mike. Not too far. So, Holmdel High staff told the district's resource officer that they had been finding human feces on or near the football field and tracked daily. Holmdel police said in a statement Thursday, school employees began monitoring the area on Monday, and police arrested Tramaglini at 5:50 a.m. It was previously reported. Tramaglini was also charged with lewdness and littering. Okay. So apparently the superintendent of a school district was running around every morning and shitting on the track.
Well, they said something about their track team, so, you know, he's...
he's just sticking up for his his district.
Uh-huh. Hey, let me put a hurdle out there for you.
Now, I have I have been following this story. Like, some people care about the president, you know, what he does.
Right on the scene is Scott Brennan. Scott, what's the latest on the movie?
Well, Mike, it turns out that he does have a family. Turns out that Draglini does have a family, and he will no longer be seeing them anymore. now, here's a guy, Mike, with a job making about $150,000 a year. Okay. Superintendent, so you are in charge of schools, kids and whatnot. Yeah. And he is going every day pooping on a track. Okay. Now, right away, questions come to mind. Like, okay, did he have a problem going? Is this like a fetish that he's into? Like, is he having some kind of did he bring toilet paper with him, or did he just continue to run away after that?
Now, I'm kind of wondering where the track was compared to where he works and home. Like, did he have to make a special route just to go down and take a dump on the field?
What now we were talking the other day, like, how do you live this down among family? Okay. So say he loses his job, right? You know, and you're hanging out at Mother's Day, getting together for Mother's Day this Sunday, right? And you're like, you know, everyone's sitting around, like maybe grabbing food, and he sits next to you, right? And then he leaves to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. What do you think the first thing that everybody's saying as he goes to the bathroom is?
I wonder if he's going to run a 100-meter dash.
Or is it like tracks down the street, you know? But
don't drop your javelin.
Yeah, like what do you say? Like, hey, Tom, like how's the old job search going?
Can we check your previous occupation? No.
That's what I mean. This is by far a move to a different state, change your last name kind of offense.
Yeah. New field, everything.
Like, how do you go face your mother or your wife or whatnot with what you've been alleged doing? How does that start?
You figure after the first maybe couple of times he got away with it, he would say, you know what? They're going to notice a pattern. They're going to be watching. So I'm going to stop right there. I pooped on their field twice.
I got him.
I'm laughing internally. Nobody's coming after me. Nobody's going to suspect the superintendent of another school did this. No, he didn't let it ride. He, like, something in his brain says, I can't stop. I gotta teach them a lesson. Like, you don't mess with Holmdel.
Like I said, either that or it's some kind of like personal, like, you know, fetish thing, you know, like it's like, yeah, I dumped on that track, like, ooh, yeah, like I feel great, I can't wait to go to work.
Well, even if it was a fetish, my thought would be this: I would do it on my own track, because who would be in charge of the investigation? Me.
Well, that's what I was thinking too. Like, at first when I read the story, and even it was reported wrong a couple times that it was his own district. So that's what I was thinking. Like, maybe he was like holding off these poop investigations for a while. Like, oh, I don't know. I think it must be someone from the high school, or, you know, like it must be one of those kids. And meanwhile, it's him, like, you know, fleecing everybody in the shocking moment of the movie. Like, it's him, you know. But so I don't know. I'm very curious to see what happens. Of course, he's on paid leave because, you know, that's what happens, you know. But
oh, my God.
So the pooper intendant was one of the ones I saw, which I liked. I liked the pooper.
Oh, that's cute. I like that. That's a good one. That's something you put on Facebook and you get 20 ha-ha.
Yeah, you get 20 happy faces, thumbs up, and likes and whatnot. So I guess that will...
And you get a bunch of comments where you're like, you have to like even though they're not that funny, you know?
Yeah.
You get those friends who think they're funny and add on, you're like, you're kind of... blowing away my genius here, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, we will keep you up to date with the pooper intendant story. We'll follow up
our coverage of the pooper intendant on the scene.
Well, what's great is I don't give a damn about anything to do with politics or wars and whatnot, but this story has piqued my interest, and I've got my finger on the pulse. So there's big meeting happening this Saturday.
Make sure to clean that finger afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, zing, pow. So there's a big meeting, guys, this Saturday to see what happens with the pooper intendant, and we'll keep you informed next week on the show.
His lawyer's Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, it's good.
Be weird.
Good, good, good. So I guess, Berlo, it's time to wrap this 200 episode extravaganza up. Good. What was that sound? What was that?
The ports on my microphone. Basically, I just tapped it, and I have my microphone on the top of. What's going to be my kitchen set, the leg, so it just made a nice little...
It sounded like a bell, like you almost timed it, like, you know, we got to wrap it. Okay, we got it. We got it.
Now I know what to do every week.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't prepare. Don't come with interesting questions or stories. Just go...
Yeah, listeners love that. Wait a minute. Breaking news. Breaking news. Could this be why the mystery pooper had to go daily at the school track? All right, let's see. apparently, someone saying that maybe he was experiencing runner's trots or runner's diarrhea. The sudden urge to go as you're pounding the pavement on a multi-mile jog, which... I have definitely felt that before, especially when I was doing that running thing. But I don't want to hear it. Why would he have to go on the track? He couldn't go in the woods even, like just a little bit off the... But he says a few factors can contribute. Diet's a big factor, high-fiber foods. So someone's here trying to maybe exonerate the pooper intendant.
I think I got an answer, Scott. I think he listened to our episode with Rab himself, and he tried to reenact the Rab running full speed while shitting at the same time.
That must be
it. That's what I think would happen. He listened to Verbal Shenanigans, and this is what happens.
Well, it's good to know that the pooper intendant even has maybe some fans out there that are trying to sugarcoat his disgusting fetish or whatnot. But, yeah, it's time to wrap this up. Hopefully, we'll be here for another 200 and more. So on to the next 100, Berlo. Anything to promote?
I will promote Life After Hate. That's the organization founded by our former guest, Christian Picciolini. Its mission is to help people leave hate groups, particularly white supremacy groups. You might have seen him on Samantha Bee, CNN, and various news outlets. He was a wonderful guest. It's a great hearing his story. He was a former neo-Nazi in Chicago and turned his life around. So if you want to learn more about the organization, go to lifeafterhate.org.
Or we're going to send Gary Goodridge down to beat the hell out of the other white supremacists.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. That's plan B for life.
Listen, if you can't clean your act up and get it together, Gary's coming.
Awesome.
I will promote, I'm going to promote a fellow podcast. I'm going to promote a fellow podcast from a good comic friend and former guest on the show. I'm going to promote the Bumper Podcast of our good friend Natty Bumper Car. Very funny comic. He does a podcast and he does animations and it's a strange time with characters and whatnot. But Natty is really turned the corner, I think, as a comic in the last 2 years or so. I've seen him crush many a time. So, and Natty's just an overall good guy. So go check out the Bumper Podcast.
Great stuff.
Yep. All right, guys. So we're 200 in. Like I said, hopefully 200 more, 400 more, whatever it is. But we're going
to catch you, Simpsons.
Yeah. But we whatever it is, we're still enjoying ourselves, and hopefully you're enjoying listening. We got some good guests coming up and whatnot, and we will continue to find new outlets for this thing and see what happens. But I'm not going anywhere, but I would like to announce that this is the last day for Mike Berlo. So, Mike, any last words?
What school do you work at?
I don't work at.
Where's the track at? Oh,
no? Yeah.
Darn.
Yeah. So, all right, Berlo, it's been good. Thanks for all your work, you know?
It was a hell of a run. But, contracts end, and I'm going to be a prime free agent like Matt Harvey, and we're going to make this happen.
So long, Harvey. So long, Berlo. Anyway, life is funny. Laugh at it, people. Keep the wind at your back. Thank you for listening all for years now. For years. So, bye-bye.
Later.